a strong contingent of the household guard had come in with the Gola to take over the evening watch. Sand, carried by the sunset wind, had stung their cheeks while they crossed the outer yard, made them blink and hurry. They could be heard in the passage outside now, exchanging the banter and ritual of their tasks.
"You are not Hate," the dwarf said. "You are Duncan Idaho. I was there when they put your dead flesh into the tank, and I was there when they removed it, alive and ready for training."
The Gola swallowed in a throat suddenly dry. The bright glow globes of the chamber lost their yellowness in the room's green hangings. The light showed beads of perspiration on the dwarf's forehead. Bijah seemed a creature of odd integrity, as though the purpose fashioned into him by the Tlaalaxu were projected out through his skin. There was power beneath the dwarf's mask of cowardice and frivolity.
"Muad'Dib has charged me to question you, to determine what it is the Tlaalaxu intend you to do here," Hate said.
"Tlaalaxu, Tlaalaxu," the dwarf sang. "I am the Tlaalaxu, you dolt. For that matter, so are you."
Hate stared at the dwarf. Bijah's radiated a charismatic alertness that made the observer think of ancient idols.
"You hear that guard outside?" Hate asked. "If I gave them the order, they'd strangle you."
"Hi! Hi!" Bijah's cried. "What a callous lout you've become! And you said you came seeking truth."
Hate found he didn't like the look of secret repose beneath the dwarf's expression.
"Perhaps I only seek the future," he said.
"Well spoken," Bijah said. "Now we know each other. When two thieves meet, they need no introduction."
"So we're thieves," Hate said. "What do we steal?"
"Not thieves, but dice," Bijah said. "And you came here to read my spots. I, in turn, read yours. And lo, you have two faces."
"Did you really see me go into the Tlaalaxu tanks?" Hate asked, fighting an odd reluctance to ask that question.
"Did I not say it?" Bijah demanded.
The dwarf bounced to his feet.
"We had a terrific struggle with you. The flesh did not want to come back."
Hate felt suddenly that he existed in a dream controlled by some other mind, and that he might momentarily forget this to become lost in the convolutions of that mind. Bijah tipped his head slyly to one side, walked all around the Gola, staring up at him.
"Excitement kindles old patterns in you," Bijah said. "You are the pursuer who doesn't want to find what he pursues."
"You're a weapon aimed at Muad'Dib," Hate said, swiveling to follow the dwarf. "What is it you're to do?"
"Nothing,"
Bijah said, stopping.
"I give you a common answer to a common question."
"Then you were aimed at Alia," Hate said. "Is she your target?"
"They call her Haut, the fish monster, on the outworlds," Bijah said. "How is it I hear your blood boiling when you speak of her?"
"So they call her Haut," the Gola said, studying Bijah's for any clue to his purpose.
The dwarf made such odd responses.
"She is the virgin harlot," Bijah said. "She is vulgar, witty, knowledgeable to a depth that terrifies, cruel when she is most kind, unthinking while she thinks. And when she seeks to build, she is as destructive as a Coriolis storm."
"So you came here to speak out against Alia," Hate said.
"Against her?"
Bijah sank to a cushion against the wall.
"I came here to be captured by the magnetism of her physical beauty."
He grinned, a saurian expression in the big-featured face.
"To attack Alia is to attack her brother," Hate said.
"That is so clear, it is difficult to see," Bijah said. "In truth, Emperor and sister are one person back to back, one being half male and half female."
"That is a thing we've heard said by the Fremen of the Deep Desert," Hate said. "And those are the ones who've revived the blood sacrifice to Shai-Hulud. How is it you repeat their nonsense?"
"You dare say nonsense?" Bijah demanded. "You, who are both man and mask? Ah, but the dice cannot read their own spots. I forget this. And you are doubly confused, because you serve the Atreides' double being. Your senses are not as close to the answer as your mind is."
"Do you preach that false ritual about Muad'Dib to your guards?" Hate asked, his voice low.
He felt his mind being tangled by the dwarf's words.
"They preach to me," Bijah said. "And they pray. Why should they not? All of us should pray. Do we not live in the shadow of the most dangerous creation the universe has ever seen?"
"Dangerous creation?
Their own mother refuses to live on the same planet with them.
Why don't you answer me straight out? Hate demanded. You know we have other ways of questioning you. We'll get our answers, one way or another.
But I have answered you. Have I not said the myth is real? Am I the wind that carries death in its belly? No, I am words. Such words as the lightning which strikes from the sand in a dark sky. I have said, blow out the lamp, day is here. And you keep saying, give me a lamp so I can find the day.
You play a dangerous game with me, Hate said. Did you think I could not understand these Zensuni ideas? You leave tracks as clear as those of a bird in mud.
Bijaz began to giggle.
Why do you laugh?
Hate demanded.
Because I have teeth, and wish I had not, Bijaz managed between giggles. Having no teeth, I could not gnash them.
And now I know your target, Hate said. You were aimed at me.
And I've hit it right on, Bijaz said. You made such a big target, how could I miss?
He nodded as though to himself.
Now I will sing to you.
He began to hum, a keening, whining, monotonous theme, repeated over and over. Hate stiffened, experiencing odd pains that played up and down his spine. He stared at the face of the dwarf, seeing youthful eyes in an old face. The eyes were the center of a network of knobby white lines which ran to the hollows below his temples. Such a large head! Every feature focused on the pursed-up mouth from which that monotonous noise issued. The sound made Hate think of ancient rituals, folk memories, old words and customs, half-forgotten meanings and lost mutterings. Something vital was happening here, a bloody play of ideas across time. Elder ideas lay tangled in the dwarf's singing. It was like a blazing light in the distance, coming nearer and nearer, illuminating life across a span of centuries.
"What are you doing to me?"
Hate gasped.
"You are the instrument I was taught to play," Bijaz said. "I am playing you. Let me tell you the names of the other traitors among the Naibs. They are Bikuros and Kahweit. There is Jadida, who was secretary to Korba. There is Abu Mujandis, the aide to Banerjee. Even now, one of them could be sinking a blade into your Muad'Dib."
Hate shook his head from side to side. He found it too difficult to talk.
"We are like brothers," Bijaz said, interrupting his monotonous hum once more. "We grew in the same tank, I first, and then you."
Hate's metal eyes inflicted him with a sudden burning pain. Flickering red haze surrounded everything he saw. He felt he had been cut away from every immediate sense except the pain, and he experienced his surroundings through a thin separation like wind-blown gauze. All had become accident, the chance involvement of inanimate matter. His own will was no more than a subtle, shifting thing. It lived without breath, and was intelligible only as an inward illumination. With a clarity born of desperation, he broke through the gauze curtain with the lonely sense of sight. His attention focused like a blazing light under Bijaz. Hate felt that his eyes cut through layers of the dwarf, seeing the little man as a hired intellect, and beneath that, a creature imprisoned by hungers and cravings which lay huddled in the eyes. Layer after layer, until finally there was only an entity aspect being manipulated by symbols.
"We are upon a battleground," Bijaz said. "You may speak of it."
His voice freed by the command, Hate said,
"You cannot force me to slay Muad'Dib."
"I have heard the Bene Gesserit say," Bijaz said, "that there is nothing firm, nothing balanced, nothing durable in all the universe, that nothing remains in its state, that each day, sometimes each hour, brings change."
Hate shook his head dumbly from side to side.
"You believed the silly emperor was the prize we sought," Bijaz said. "How little you understand our masters, the Tlaelaxu. The Guild and Bene Gesserit believe we produce artifacts. In reality, we produce tools and services. Anything can be a tool. Poverty, war. War is useful because it is effective in so many areas. It stimulates the metabolism. It enforces government. It diffuses genetic strains. It possesses a vitality such as nothing else in the universe. Only those who recognize the value of war and exercise it have any degree of self-determination."
In an oddly placid voice, Hate said,
"Strange thoughts coming from you. almost enough to make me believe in a vengeful providence. What restitution was exacted to create you? It would make a fascinating story, doubtless with an even more extraordinary epilogue.
Magnificent! Bijas chortled. You attack. Therefore you have willpower and exercise self-determination.
You're trying to awaken violence in me, Hate said in a panting voice.
Bijas denied this with a shake of the head.
Awaken, yes. Violence, no. You are a disciple of awareness by training, so you have said. I have an awareness to awaken in you, Duncan Idaho.
Hate.
Duncan Idaho. Killer extraordinary. Lover of many women. Swordsman soldier. Atreides field hand on the field of battle. Duncan Idaho.
The past cannot be awakened.
Cannot?
It has never been done.
True, but our masters defy the idea that something cannot be done. Always they seek the proper tool, the right application of effort, the services of the proper...
You hide your real purpose. You throw up a screen of words, and they mean nothing.
There is a Duncan Idaho in you, Bijas said. It will submit to emotion, or to dispassionate examination, but submit it will. This awareness will rise through a screen of suppression and selection out of the dark past which dogs your footsteps. It goads you even now while it holds you back. There exists that being within you upon which awareness must focus and which you will obey.
The Tleilaxu think I'm still their slave, but I...
Quiet, slave!
Bijas said in that whining voice. Hate found himself frozen in silence.
Now we are down to bedrock, Bijas said. I know you feel it, and these are the power words to manipulate you. I think they will have sufficient leverage.
Hate felt the perspiration pouring down his cheeks, the trembling of his chest and arms, but he was powerless to move.
One day, Bijas said, the Emperor will come to you. He will say, "She is gone." The grief mask will occupy his face. He will give water to the dead, as they call their tears hereabouts. And you will say, using my voice, "Master, oh, Master!"
Hate's jaw and throat ached with the locking of his muscles. He could only twist his head in a brief arc from side to side.
You will say, "I carry a message from Bijas."
The dwarf grimaced.
Poor Bijas, who has no mind. Poor Bijas, a drum stuffed with messages, an essence for others to use. Pound on Bijas, and he produces a noise.
Again he grimaced.
You think me a hypocrite, Duncan Idaho. I am not. I can grieve, too. But the time has come to substitute swords for words.
A hiccup shook Hate. Bijas giggled, then.
Ah, thank you, Duncan, thank you. The demands of the body save us. As the Emperor carries the blood of the Harkonnens in his veins, he will do as we demand. He will turn into a spitting machine, a biter of words that ring with a lovely noise to our masters.
Hate blinked, thinking how the dwarf appeared like an alert little animal, a thing of spite and rare intelligence.
Harkonnen blood in the Atreides?
You think of Beast Raban, the vile Harkonnen, and you glare, Bijas said. You are like the Fremen in this. When words fail, the sword is always at hand, eh? You think of the torture inflicted upon your family by the Harkonnens. And, through his mother, your precious Paul is a Harkonnen. You would not find it difficult to slay a Harkonnen, now would you?
Bitter frustration coursed through the Gola. Was it anger? Why should this cause anger?
Oh, Bijas said, and... Ah, ha! Click, click! There is more to the message. It is a trade the Tleilaxu offer your precious Paul Atreides. Our masters will restore his beloved, a sister to yourself, another Gola.
Hate felt suddenly that he existed in a universe occupied only by his own heartbeats.
A Gola, Bijas said. It will be the flesh of his beloved. She will bear his children. She will love only him. We can even improve on the original if he so desires. Did ever a man have greater opportunity to regain what he'd lost? It is a bargain he will leap to strike.
Bijas nodded, eyes drooping as though tiring. Then,
he will be tempted, and in his distraction, you will move close. In the instant, you will strike. Two golas, not one. That is what our masters demand.
The dwarf cleared his throat, nodded once more, said,
"Speak."
"I will not do it," Haight said.
"But Duncan Idaho would," Bijah said. "It will be the moment of supreme vulnerability for this descendant of the Harkonnens. Do not forget this. You will suggest improvements to his beloved. Perhaps a deathless heart, gentler emotions. You will offer asylum as you move close to him. A planet of his choice, somewhere beyond the Imperium. Think of it. His beloved, restored. No more need for tears, and a place of idols to live out his years."
"A costly package," Haight said, probing. "He'll ask the price."
"Tell him he must renounce his godhead and discredit the Kizarat,"